pleased and relieved. "That's just great, Wiley." "Ought to be at Ares Vallis in another 3-4 days, Greg said. Then he added, "If the weather holds up." Rodriguez laughed. "There's not another storm in sight." "Good." When Craig signed off, Rodriguez began checking the telemetry from the rover, and Jamie went back to the inventory list. The wind was still yowling outside, like dead spirits begging to come in out of the cold. The wind was appreciably softer, and sunlight actually lanced below the overhanging clouds as the day drew to a close. Jamie was tired, physically and emotionally drained, as he made his way back to the comm center for what must have been the 100th time that day. As the storm wound down, he had spent most of the day in the greenhouse dome, checking and rechecking the area that had been damaged. He had even suited up and gone outside to inspect the damaged areas without the emergency patches and epoxy covering them. It was hard to say, but the areas seemed to have been punctured, not torn. Of course, once punctured, the plastic fabric began to rip along the seam where it connected to the foundation of the dome. "What we need here is a forensic structural engineer," Jamie told himself, "if there is such a person. Maybe Wiley could make some sense of it." He took dozens of photographs of the damaged areas and transmitted them back to Tarawa for their analysis. There was nothing more he could think to do, but he kept feeling that he was missing something, something important. "What is it, Grandfather?" he asked silently. "What have I overlooked?" Once in the comm center, he slumped down on the little chair and put through another message to Tarawa. "Pete, the greenhouse dome looks okay now, but I'm worried about what might happen in the next storm. Maybe that won't be for another year, but it's a problem we ought to think about now, not when the dust starts blowing again. It's obvious that we overlooked this problem, but with 20/20 hindsight, I think we ought to pay attention to it. Can you get the world's assembled experts to figure out how we can protect the greenhouse dome with the materials we have on hand? That includes native Martian materials, of course. What I'm wondering is, can we make glass bricks out of the Martian sand, build an igloo that's transparent? Look into it for me, will you?" The wind died down almost completely after sunset. Jamie was tempted to put on a suit and go out to see if the stars were still in their places, but he felt too tired. The outside cameras showed that the planes were still there, although what condition their solar panels might be in would have to wait for a closer inspection. The dome was quiet, back to normal, when Jamie finally went to his quarters. VJ was already there in the bunk. He blinked with surprise.
"Tomas is bunking with Trudy," she said matter-of-factly.
Nodding, Jamie muttered, "I wonder if Mitsuo and Stacy are going to get it on." VJ giggled softly.
"Not bloody likely."
"Why not?"
"Stacy's gay."
Jamie's eyes popped open.
"What?" "Stacy's a lesbian."
"There's nothing wrong with that," Jamie told himself. Still, he felt shocked. "Poor Mitsuo," he heard himself whisper as he got under the covers beside her. VJ moved over to make room for him on the narrow bunk.
"I don't know about him. He hasn't come on to any of the women."
"Maybe he's gay, too."
"I doubt it. I think he's just got more self-control than you Western ape men."
Jamie wanted to debate the point, but instead he closed his eyes and fell instantly asleep. Glass bricks. Pete Connors stared gloomily at the thick stack of papers on his desk. It's always a mistake asking the experts how to do something, he reminded himself. They snow you under with every detail they've ever come across. Still, he thought, the NASA guys and the university profs provided the material we asked for damned fast. If only there wasn't so much of it. He took a deep breath, then booted up his computer and called up the communications program. The tiny red light on the camera atop the display screen winked on. "Jamie, I'm going to be sending you half a ton of documentation about how to make glass bricks out of in-situ materials. It won't be an easy job, but it can be done. I'll squirt the technical write-ups to you on the other channel. It's from all sorts of bright thinkers at NASA, MIT, Caltech, places like that. I think maybe some of them are Eskimos. First thing you'll have to do is build a solar reflector. You can scavenge one of the spare dish antennas from stores and coat it with aluminum spray.
The reflector will be the heat source for your furnace. You need to produce temperatures of 2,000 degrees Celsius to melt the sand particles from the Martian soil. First, you'll have to crush the sand grains down real fine. Half an hour later, Connors finished with, "And then you'll have glass bricks, buddy. Nothing to it." Finally, with a weary sigh, Connors turned to the subject he would have preferred to ignore, but he couldn't. "Jamie, old man Trumbull is still pushing to get you out as mission director." Noon. Sol 63.
"I see it," Dex yelped.
They had just topped a low bluff, and the rover was nosing down the steep incline toward the broad, low swale where the Pathfinder and its tiny wheeled Sojourner had been waiting silently for nearly 30 years. Craig was driving. Both men were shaggy, bearded, their coveralls limp and sweat-stained. They were both grinning from ear to ear.
"Look," Dex cried, rising halfway out of his seat and pointing at the rocks. "There's the Twin Peaks, and Yogi, and Barnacle Bill."
Craig laughed. "You're acting like you didn't expect they'd be here." Dex plopped back in the chair, his insides fluttering. "They're all here. They're really here. After all the years of looking at the pictures and watching the videos, it's all real. It really all happened. They landed the spacecraft here, back when they could barely fly a ton of payload to Mars." "This hardware's worth billions," Dex told himself. "A lot more than it cost in the first place. Like a painting by Da Vinci or Van Gogh." He wanted to drive the rover, wanted to stomp on the accelerator and race down there in a swirl of dust. But he knew that Wiley wouldn't let him, and he realized it was probably a good thing. "Christ on a crutch," Dex thought. "I'm wound up like a little kid at Christmas."
"Maybe you ought to call back to base and tell them we're here," Craig suggested.
"Right," Dex agreed. "And make sure the cameras are getting all this. This is history, you know."
Craig chuckled. They parked a 5-minute walk away from the Pathfinder, so they could survey the area carefully and not disturb the site with their rover's cleated wheel tracks. The old spacecraft sat there, flat and square, with its shriveled protective shroud pulled up around it like an old lady holding up her skirts. The machine looked strange, alien in the Martian landscape, an angular metal contrivance in the midst of weathered rocks and rust-red sand. Sojourner, so tiny it looked like a wheeled toy some child might have put together from a kit, was still nosed against the rock that had been dubbed Yogi. Dex was trembling with anticipation as he and Craig got into their hard suits. Once outside, once actually on the ground and standing beside the old hardware, the excitement began to ebb away. "It's all so small," Dex thought. "Hell, I had a toy car bigger than Pathfinder when I was 10 years old. And I could carry Sojourner under one arm, just about." He turned the full circle, surveying the area with a geologist's analytical eye. "Water rushed through here, all right. A river, or maybe a big flood that broke through an ice dam. You can see the marks of flowing water all over the area."
"Come on," Craig called. "Let's get to work."
Carefully, they photographed the area for comparison with the catalog imagery from the Pathfinder itself 3 decades earlier.
"Water came down from over there," Craig said, pointing. "Busted right along here at a pretty good clip, I'd say."
"Yeah, but where did it go?" Craig pointed toward the ground.
"Let's see how deep it went."
They went back to the rover and broke out the power drill and other tools. While Craig began digging to find the permafrost layer, Dex planted 3 beacons at the distance of 10-minute walks from the Pathfinder. The sun was nearing the gently rolling horizon when Craig finally said,
"Better roll our buggy up here now. I don't want to bust a gut carrying this rig any distance."
"It weighs less than 300 pounds in this gravity," Dex pointed out. But Craig was already on his way back to the rover.
"And more than 250, he countered. "The less distance we have to tote it, the better off we'll be. You don't want a hernia out here, do you?"
Dex laughed and started to put the cores that the drill had pulled up into insulated sample boxes. If Wiley had hit a permafrost layer, it wasn't obvious. The drilling had gone down to 30 meters without much change in the underlying rock's consistency. The rover came jinking and squeaking across the red sand like a giant metal caterpillar, its wheels clambering